Hey everybody, a little bit something different for you today. I was on a podcast called Star Trek Stories, which is hosted by a longtime patron at patreon.com/LipenskyVal. Got my own plug in first. Anyway, I was on the Star Trek podcast and we talked about the DS9 episode, A Man Alone, which is an old DS9 episode. So the second episode of that series, I believe. Maybe the third. We get into this in the discussion. I'm delirious with fever. I haven't been well for the past couple of days. I'm recording this intro because the podcast came out, and I'm going to post the full episode onto this feed so you can listen to it right after I get done talking here, but you can check out their show. It's called Star Trek Stories. There'll be links in the description below. Let me know what you guys thought about the conversation, and otherwise we'll be back with the normal show next week. When I feel better, and we all have time. Thanks very much for listening. Hope you guys enjoy the content. Check out Star Trek Stories post-haste. See ya.
And now, it's time for a Star Trek story.
You know, Aaron, so we've watched Star Trek a few times on this show.
Once or twice.
Once or twice. We've seen a lot. We've seen like a few of the shows develop, particularly the original show, Next Generation. So as now we're starting Deep Space Nine and we're starting to get more into like the other shows, this begs into a question. What makes a good second episode of a Star Trek series?
What makes a good second episode?
Yeah.
It's here's what you're going to get with the show. That's ideally what it should be. Because you have the big splash. Now here's what the show's going to be. Here's what you're in for. All right, good night, everybody.
Just throw them a good solid mid-episode. Just like, okay, but here's really what the show is going to be. So don't get your hopes up too high, everyone.
No, I think it's more than that. Of course, it's like you gotta pass the ball, and then that next episode has to catch it and like continue playing that same offense, right?
Throwing the ball, starting to like flesh it out. Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure this episode of Star Trek will help us figure this out. Yes, welcome to Star Trek Stories, everyone. This is episode 50, A Man Alone. This is our 50th anniversary, Aaron. Congratulations.
We made it.
Welcome, everyone. I am your succeeding host, Jaren Hatch, and I'm joined here by my secondary co-host, Aaron Cole. Hello, Aaron.
Getting.
Yes, we have only just started our look at Deep Space Nine and the end of TNG. Last time we watched the DS9 series premiere Emissary, our good friend and DS9 fan Carlton was on to help us introduce that, and he helped introduce his wife Sarah to Star Trek for the first time with that episode, and she liked it, so thank God our work here is done. Good night, everyone. For this second episode, we have a special guest on with us. Coming over subspace frequencies, we have the very lovely Wes Teasdale on with us. Hello, Wesley.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah,
glad to be talking Star Trek with you.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for coming on, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And also, whenever a story starts with he tried to introduce his wife to something, I'm glad that it worked out a little bit better for him than it usually does when someone says that sentence.
And we were just joking before the show. It's like, I don't understand. Is Saruman the bad guy? Who's Sauron? No, you gotta, I told you, if you'd read the books.
Don't embarrass me. Don't embarrass me, baby. Don't do that.
Yeah, for those who don't know, so Wes is the creator and host of the Penske podcast and really the Penske file, which is really the big umbrella for all your shows.
Correct.
Which I believe they can find at penskefile.com.
Yes.
And
we've been doing the Star Trek show for 10 years at this point. Yeah, we're going on 10 years. We're in Voyager now. So I have a co-host named Clay who the podcast started off as a random guest of the week type situation where it was me and somebody else that I would invite on, a friend or something. And Clay was one of those guests at the very start. And then we did TNG, a little bit of TOS, and then into DS9. And Clay became like a full-time co-host at the DS9 point in time of the podcast. And he's been with us for 7 years or whatever it is at this point. But yeah, now we're in Voyager. We hopped around though. We didn't do it in order. So we've done Enterprise, TNG, TOS, the movies, Enterprise, some of the modern Trek, and now we're into Voyager's fourth season at this point.
I catch a lot of other shows and people talking about Star Trek. Sometimes it's just reactors. Sometimes it's just super fans gushing. Sometimes it's just people going on just to bash modern Star Trek. There's just weird little categories. And I appreciate your guys' coverage because it's a little more thoughtful and critical.
Is it? Well, I mean, thank you for the kind words. I guess the whole thing about our show is that, like, after doing it for a decade, it started because I was such a big fan of TNG. And I was like, oh, there's a podcast called The X-Files Files, which that comedian Kumail Nanjiani had done. And it was like an episode by episode breakdown of X-Files. And I was just kind of struggling with what to do on the internet at that point as like kind of a hobby. And I was like, oh, I like TNG. I'll do a TNG episode podcast type thing like that. So it started on YouTube and then eventually turned into a podcast and then kept going from there. But the other series I'm less familiar with, and it's just the thing of, and Clay is not particularly familiar with any of it, but we do like talking about them critically and sort of breaking down what they are. I think it's just the fact that, like, I never really fit into the super fan mold. Like, I think at this point, after a decade of doing it, I'm like, you know, what's kind of remarkable is that this thing went on for so long. And in my opinion, there's not a tremendous number of fantastic episodes or shows out of it. Like, your batting average is pretty low at this point. And it's not to say that it can't be enjoyable, but I think the thing that I'm getting most from the podcast at this point is to have a holistic sense of how this franchise has aged, which is interesting. We're in the middle of Voyager, so at times it can be extremely punishing to learn this kind of thing. But it's really, I've just enjoyed talking with it about Clay, talking about with all the guests who have come on in the past and stuff like that. And I do appreciate your compliment, because what we do, I do most of all appreciate the comments from the people who say that we're being fair. And then it's also counterbalanced by the people who just complain. It's like, why are you so mean to this show? Why are you being mean to this? Or why don't you like this enough? Yeah, my child is being ruined. And it's, I think there's a lot to talk about even in the bad episodes of this, which is kind of a unique thing for the franchise to be able to do that. And so it's been fun. It's been a nice decade. It's been an enjoyable. We built up enough of a little audience to keep it going, and people seem to enjoy it. So onward we go through 100 and whatever Voyager episodes are left on this, and then we'll figure out what we're doing.
Still trekking.
I'm glad I'm here today to talk about Voyager, to DS9, just because it's been nice to go back to a solid C minus of a DS9 episode and just be able to compare it to Voyager.
Yeah, a little breath air from the peak.
Yeah, they're so different. The shows are so different from each other. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Completely different. I think you've said essentially DS9 and TNG are your reigning favorites. You mentioned Next Gen, like, being a show you like. Was that like a show you watched as a kid when it was coming out? Was that a little later for you?
I would have been my grandfather introduced it to me. So the way I learned it was I would go over to my grandparents' house on weekdays after school or weekends or something. And the time that he ate dinner, which he was an old man, so it was probably like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or something, there was a TNG episode always on at that point. And he would sit and eat dinner and watch the TNG episode. That was probably, when did that show end?
94.
94 was the last episode of TNG. So it would have been the 91, 92, 93 range that I was doing that. So it would have been about like 7 or 8 at that point. And so that was my introduction to it.
Yeah, I would have been around the same age then. That's, remember, when it was really kind of crystallizing for me. For me, it was my dad. But I feel like most everyone's stories is some variation of my dad, or in this case, granddad.
Yeah.
The ultimate dad show.
Except for the dads. Their story, well, it was me.
I just stumbled onto this show. I had no idea what it was, and I showed my kid to it, and it took off after all that.
Before it was even cool.
Yeah. No, because I don't think TOS was never a thing. He didn't watch TOS. He didn't care about TOS, but he was really into Patrick Stewart and Next Gen. Yeah.
Was Deep Space Nine down the road, or did you watch that when it was coming out as well?
I watched it as it was coming out, but not in any way that would make me understand what the show was. So the podcast watched through was the only time that I've seen the entire DS9 story all the way through. I had seen episodes. I knew the big ones. I knew all the hits that people say with DS9, probably seen a couple of the smaller episodes, but had no idea what it felt like to watch DS9 as a show in and of itself.
I mean, we're going to get into it here in just a second with the actual episode, but if you had to sum up real quick, like, what particularly about Deep Space Nine, what makes this either your favorite or, you know, near the top of your favorites?
Yeah, I always say that TNG is the best Star Trek show, and DS9 is the best television show that happens to be about Star Trek. So DS9, you know, coming back to what I talked about earlier, the franchise peaked fairly quickly. Like, I consider DS9 to be the pinnacle of Star Trek storytelling, in the sense that, like, when I say that, all I mean is that TNG is nice, and TNG is very clean, and TNG is a very good show. TNG is a little bit of like a fable sci-fi story, which in that they have a point, and they're going to teach you a lesson about something, or they're going to have a character interaction, but the characters are also paragons of virtue, and the lead captain is such a paragon of virtue that it's more of a lecture about, here's a little morality tale, but we have a clear-cut view of what the correct opinion is to have about these things. And I think DS9 pushed it a little bit and wanted to play in the sandbox and say, what does it mean to have this as your universe? And like, how do you create a show that actually feels a little bit more human than TNG? And how do you express against these ideals while still playing in the sandbox? And I think that DS9 just does the best job of combining a whole bunch of different characters with different worldviews and having them interact in a meaningful way that provides, I don't think DS9 is not profound, I wouldn't say. I don't think you're going to walk away from it going like, wow, this is just like modern day philosophy. Like, what a beautiful series. But you are going to come away from it going, you know, the characters have whole different backgrounds, and some of them have varying degrees of viable views about things. And it's not just the top-down structure of TNG sort of forcing you to think or take an opinion one way or the other. And just in this episode, you just see how fractured they are early in the show in terms of, some of them are in Starfleet, some of them are not in Starfleet, and things like that. And I just think it's the most adult of the Star Trek shows. And that turned it into the best TV show. Adult in the sense that it like has something to say that can be reliably interesting.
Yeah, I think we've used this analogy on the show before, but like TNG always kind of feels like secular Bible stories, like that kind of version of everything. And then Deep Space Nine feels a little bit more like, but here's what all this looks like a little more in the real world, like from like, you know, childhood conceptual to like, oh, damn, okay.
and the TNG is not bad. It sounds like you're so, like when you say it, it's only by comparison that it sounds worse, but it's like TNG is a very clean, relaxing kind of show. And what's nice about its setup is that it's much more drop-inable than DS9 is in that way, because to really get DS9, it's hard to drop into DS9 and pick a random episode and be like, oh, I exactly understand where my mindset needs to be as I'm watching this now. TNG doesn't suffer from that problem because it's so evenly baked that you can just come in and you're like, I understand everything about this episode and I understand everything that's going on. DS9 suffers a little bit from that. Like, even I love DS9. I have a hard time putting on a random DS9 episode now. The podcast has sort of shattered my ability to do that anyway, but it's like, it's very hard to pick a DS9 episode, even the great ones. Jaren, you probably, what's the episode where Odo's standing outside of Kira's apartment when she's in there with the Vedic guy? It's like Heart of Stone?
I think you're thinking, what is it? Crossfire. Yeah.
Crossfire. Crossfire is a great episode, but I would never put Crossfire on and say like, I'm going to watch this episode, but it's a five on our scale. It's like the one of the better Star Trek episodes. So that's the case.
It all mostly just makes sense contextually along with all of it rather than just, you know, separately with some notable exceptions, of course.
Yep.
Well, all right. Well, let's see if this episode of Deep Space Nine gets a 5-star ranking. Yes, we are watching A Man Alone Today. This premiered January 17th, 1993. This is the second episode produced for the first season of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And yes, speaking to our question of the day, we're going to be looking at what makes a good second episode of a Star Trek series. What do you want to do? What do you not want to do? I think getting a TV series going is tough business, and probably doubly so for a big series like Deep Space Nine. And you not only have to grab them in the first episode, but you have to convince them to stay week after week. So yeah, we'll see if Deep Space Nine makes a good case for itself in the second episode. For those of you at home who are going to watch along with us, this is going to be your invitation to watch. Star Trek Deep Space Nine is streaming on Paramount Plus. You can find it by bringing up Season 1, Episode 3, and we will be back after we watch A Man Alone.
Business is good, Quark. You're almost making an honest living.
A lot of new faces.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
And I'm sure you've already tried to sell it to a few of them.
We made the decision.
That's not true. That's not true.
What?
You decided to ask me to agree. Well,
I'll do. Grapevine says Chief Orion and the missus are having problems.
I'll never understand the humanoid need to couple.
You've never coupled?
Choose not to. Too many compromises. You want to watch the Caronet tournament, she wants to listen to music, so you compromise. You listen to music. You like Earth jazz, she prefers Klingon opera, so you compromise. You listen to Klingon opera. So here you were, ready to have a nice night, watching the Caronet match, and you wind up spending an agonizing evening listening to Klingon opera.
So today, on Star Trek Stories, we watched A Man Alone. In case you have never seen this one before, there is a Bajoran who shows up on the station. This is someone that Odo had arrested years earlier during the occupation for a bunch of shady stuff. And there's like a little bit of an altercation between them. And then later, this guy is found dead in one of Quark's hollow suites. And as they're investigating, there's some evidence pointing toward Odo. And this causes some of the station's Bajoran population to be upset, feel like he shouldn't be investigating because he's the prime suspect, and he starts kind of being the target of, I don't know, bigotry, discrimination against him being like a changeling, a shifter. They're calling him a shifter throughout the episode. In the end, it's revealed that this whole big thing is an orchestrated scheme by this Bajoran to frame Odo. Turns out that what has actually happened is that this guy is still alive. He grew a clone of himself and then murdered his clone and then framed it so Odo looked like the killer. and then you get there's a few other stories going on in this. Then you also have like a B story with Keiko O'Brien, Miles O'Brien's wife. So she has a whole B story where she's trying to put together a school. She's trying to get students from the Bajorans and the other races. And yeah, she successfully gets a school going. And also during all this, Dr. Bashir is still very much infatuated with Lieutenant Dax, is trying super hard to make his moves. Meanwhile, she and Commander Sisko are getting further reacquainted since they know each other from one of Dax's past lives. Sisko also ends up kind of getting to know Bashir a little bit more, and all kinds of different little stories going on the station. Wes, what are your thoughts coming in off of this second episode of Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, to build off of what you guys said, it's a, if we're assuming that we're talking about the old model of syndicated TV, which is that you have 26 of these things coming up and you need to sort of set the stage. It's you remove the bombast of the first episode, the first episode of the pilot, and then you move into what the show is kind of going to be. And I would argue, if I were writing a Star Trek show, I would do something like what A Man Alone does, except I would say, cut out this murder plot. I would just say, just have a bunch of scenes that don't need to do anything and don't need to build on anything, but are just establishing what character interactions are like at this point in the show. Because to take it into this one, by far the best scenes of this are the hostility and aggression that the characters are showing towards each other as they're placed into this new situation that they all have to deal with. This episode suffers because it does what Voyager eventually decides to do, which is the wrong thing to do in a second episode, is to just pick a random sort of generic sci-fi plot and be like, this has to be the focus of this episode because this is a Star Trek show and people are going to be upset if there's not a sci-fi clone in a tub or whatever. And this episode, I think, really works. And we gave it a 2 out of 5 on our viewing. And through the first 20 minutes of this, I was like, this is way better than a 2. Is like, has Voyager just poisoned me or is this, am I something wrong? Then, of course, then the clone plot kicks in and I'm like, oh, right, this is going to take over the show now. And it does. And that's where it becomes a 2 on my scale, just out of 5. But the second episode I would predominantly focus on character work. And if I had a Star Trek show, I would say after we set out the pilot, we're going to have a very small low-key episode that's just the characters pairing off with each other and see what shakes out from this, and then we'll go from there.
I like that concept. Just a bunch of little vignettes almost.
Yeah.
Like
doing the paperwork.
And Keiko and their thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome.
I love that about this episode. Is the O'Brien, I generally don't like the O'Brien's relationship on DS9, but they charmed me in this one. It was like, this is a great fight that these guys are having. It's like, she doesn't want to be there. He's like, well, what the hell do you want me to do about it? Like, I'll get a transfer if that's what you want. She's like, no, don't do that, Miles. And it's like, how many times have people had this conversation? And I just like that it felt so a peek behind the curtain about what's actually going on the station in a way that the sci-fi, you know, space amoeba vibrating crystal story is not going to get you there in that same way.
Yeah, like getting into the, like, piggybacking off of that for, like, getting into the real discussion. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right when you say, like, in terms of just like the character kind of setup work, this does is definitely the best part of the episode. I think I'm a little more positive on the murder plot. I don't think it's great. It's just a kind of Star Trek gimmicky thing. I think it's a fun idea if you're going to focus on Odo and try to kind of flesh him out in a story. It kind of makes sense to have some kind of crime be like the way you kind of explore that. But he doesn't really end up solving the crime. Like he takes a weird back seat into the actual solving in it. And he kind of ends up just having to bear prejudice for like the back half until they're like, oh, it's this clone. And then he can go get him. So I feel like the idea is fine. The execution really lacks, but all the other stories I think are a lot more interesting. I think it's what it also is good at doing. It's not just setting up the characters, but it's also kind of showing you, here's how we can do Star Trek in a way that you haven't really seen on Next Gen. Cause there's almost like, you know, you talk about an A or B plot, you almost get like a C and a D plot just because there's so many little, Sisko and Dax and Bashir, their little kind of triad and just like yep. figuring out their relationships with each other. You mentioned Keiko and O'Brien, but then like kind of Jake and Nog.
Jake and Nog have a little thing.
Right. And so you're kind of getting this little, you know, it almost feels like a Wes Anderson, like Royal Tenenbaums or something like that, where you're just getting all these little vignettes, or like Life Aquatic, all these little different vignettes of people in life on the station. And you get this sense that so many things are happening on the station all in conjunction with each other. I'm like, you really haven't seen this before on TOS or TNG. I think that's where the episode succeeds the most. And it's like, yeah, you can't do this on the other shows. But you're right, the clone plot.
they even do it production-wise, which I don't think I would have noticed the first time through DS9 watching it now, but it's extremely obvious when watching it in Voyager's context, is that DS9 inhabits a space that the writers seem to think is like a real space, because I think what the genius of somewhere like Quark's Bar is that production-wise, it allows multiple stories to happen in the same area, and the camera can easily move through space and allow characters to exist in the background of other stories that are going on. So like in this one, it pans, you know, Odo and Quark are down at the bar having a conversation. Well, the O'Briens are up above them and they can look at them and see them. They can't understand them, but then you can cut up there. You can cut to Sisko and the other thing. When they come down, they can like interact and have different scenes, even though it's not this awkward thing of the character just randomly walks in. They're all there. So there's like this sense of, you can tell the story that way. Even there's a small cut where Jake and, it's not a cut, but Jake and Nog are having a conversation as they walk through the promenade. And it segues to Bashir and Dax just by the camera moves to them coming out of a different hallway. And there's this sense of like, this is a real space that these characters exist in, and they actually would run into each other in a real sense. And I think that DS9, some of the genius that's not talked about for DS9 is that its set design is astounding for the kind of show stuff that they're doing. Like they chalk it up to Cardassian architecture, I think, at some point, which is that like the higher ups are always looking down, and that makes sense in the context of the Cardassians, but it's also just this great filming set design that allows you to have a lot of creativity. And the way that like TNG's bridge design is beautiful for just shooting everybody, and you get like great angles of stuff. DS9's is really good for the character universe storytelling building, just because you're allowed to exist in the same space but not interact with each other at the same time.
Mm. Everything just kind of has this kind of organic spontaneity that it's not even like in TNG or Voyager, it's like in any of them, they can't really do the same kind of thing that you can on this one. So it really makes it still stand apart from all the shows.
Yeah, a TNG's version would be, I mean, the bridge is an example, but like the conference room serves as that focus. It's like everyone's in it, but of course it's TNG, so like they're literally sitting at a conference table, and it's like there's a stoicness to that, which is fun. And I love the conference room scenes, but it's very different from what DS9 was trying to do.
Yeah, you don't get that dynamic at the different levels and all the things you can play with.
No. The guy at the head of the table tells you what everyone's going to do, He'll listen to what you're going to say, but he's going to tell you what to do, and then you go off and do it. DS9, you know, we just talked, the O'Briens are talking about whether or not they're going to stay at this point. You know, it's like there's a conflict already brewing.
You get Odo looking down on you from the promenade.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Always lurking.
Grunting under his breath.
Well, and the great thing about those kind of shots is that you can communicate so much without having to say anything. If you have a shot of Odo just kind of sternly looking down, he doesn't have to say anything, and it tells you so much about that character without even having to talk to him. And again, those kind of moments don't, like, there are some shots where, like, yeah, like Carol, like, look or whatever, and it's like you just don't quite get those same kind of silent shots that are telling you a lot that you do in the other ones. And, you know, as we're talking about this, like, it really makes me feel kind of strangely conflicted about this episode, because I feel like, and especially if we're looking at the context of what makes a good second episode, I feel like there, if you're looking at this as specifically a second episode giving you an idea of what the show can be, I think it actually is a success because of some of this stuff. If you look at it as an isolated story on its own, I would not call this some wild success.
Yeah. I mean, not to be super technical nerd, but I mean, it's technically not the second episode of the show, right? Either. So it's like, because we, is Past Prologue air before this? Was that a production thing?
Yeah. So this is the second one they produced, and they decided to air Past Prologue. So that's why I went with this one specifically, because this was their first go. It's like, hey, now what can we do with the show?
Not like I have a Star Trek podcast or anything. I'm just stuff. As soon as I said it, it was like, it's probably some production nonsense that they wanted to air this one at the Mantrap. So that's actually more interesting and more relevant, because it does feel like a second episode in that sense. Past Prologue is better, if I remember correctly, than this, but it's maybe not as good of a second episode of the show.
Yeah, and like after they did this, they worried that it didn't. I think Michael Piller, he's talked about this one. He felt it ended up feeling flat, and it didn't really have the energy they wanted it to have. So then they went with Past Prologue. But even though, yeah, you're right. This one, I think, sets up the show better, whereas the second one sets up it is a better story with Kira and the conflict she has. So then it's like this kind of this weird apples and oranges. Where it's like, do you go with the episode that sets up the series long-term better, or do you go with what you think is just a stronger episode your second time out of the gate? It's kind of a little conundrum.
It is. It's a legitimate show concern, I think, to have when you're juggling these things about whether or not you want to, if you have a mid-tier episode that you think suits the concept better, or if you have a great episode that is, this is not really what we're going to do, but it's a better episode. Yeah, it's I think that A Man Alone mostly works in setting up DS9, just in terms of the atmosphere of the station. I think it sets up the sort of like the conflict between the two groups that are on the show, which is kind of astounding. Like Voyager had abandoned this at this point in its series run. Yeah, but it's like I didn't even remember that they were they're still pretty hostile to each other. It is one of the takeaways that I take away from DS9 is that the characters on this show actually, some of them dislike each other, or they are working together, but they don't really particularly like each other. And I think that this one establishes that pretty well. It's a, you know, like even like what do you guys think of because Bashir is someone who always gets a lot of flack. And I think that he's kind of in my opinion, he's a victim of sort of like a modernizing perspective of what's allowable to do between people. But I find them to be kind of fun. And I think that Dax is written well enough and performed well enough where she's definitely portraying the older, more experienced person who's dealing with a sort of infatuated younger person. It always strikes me as weird too that Bashir is supposed to be like 22 or something, and it was supposed to treat him like a kid, but it doesn't come across to me. But I don't know what you guys think about their interactions, but I like them because they're the cold open in this one, interestingly too. It's a strange cold open for it, but there's,
I think my first watch through, I kind of struggled with Bashir, to be honest, initially, but then I ended up loving him and his arc, and I think that's what it becomes. And when you go back and watch him, you see that character development from the beginning in the whole thing. and you learn to appreciate early Bashir.
You see him grow. It's Deep Space Nine has this weird quality where retroactively things change because things can grow so much. So I can see, and I can kind of remember watching this at the time as a kid and thinking kind of Bashir was a prick. But then now I have the benefit of seeing where he goes and where they all go. And so now it's interesting kind of, I know there's a character arc. I'm not worried that he's going to be some static, I'm just the dick that's always chasing girls. Cause it's like, if this were more like TOS or TNG, the worry would be, it's like, am I going to get 7 seasons of like this guy just chasing women the whole time?
Is this my new Riker for the next?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I view him as, he could have been much worse, really. Like, I think that he's written in a way that is not intended to be, this is a problem that his personality has. It's really just that he's kind of like, he's very aggressive, and like, he's like, his med school training, his desire to be out there like on the frontier is a little bit more like, he's generally portrayed as kind of a naive kid who's come out. And I think the naivete plays well against Dax, just because Dax can kind of smirk at him and sort of like play along with it a little bit in a way that's not very upsetting for her. But I do think that he's not my favorite DS9 character, but I think that his early development is kind of intriguingly flawed in a way that a lot of the other shows aren't. And I still kind of like him. I don't think occasionally the franchise will get into sort of flawed characters that are like, this person is just extremely unlikable. Like, I don't want to deal with watching this person. And I don't think Bashir ever falls into that for me.
It's the accent. It's got to be.
It is, yeah. His olive skin and accents is just, it just puts me right in his camp.
It is an interesting choice that they cold open with them, because they're not super critical to the, you know, the main story per se, but they are, I think, pretty well representative of the more meta thing that's happening with, like, it's essentially a story of all these characters trying to figure things out and figure out their relationship with each other. That's really Jake and Nog, Keiko and O'Brien, you know, Sisko and Bashir and Daxo.
The brain teaser of relationships. Just got to get a problem solved. How do we all get along together? It does set up the holosuite where the guy is killed. It does establish that as a thing. I don't know if we've seen that before, but it does.
We were talking about that. Holosuite needs a lock very clearly.
Yeah.
No one is knocking in that first scene. They're all just like stepping in on Dax, and then Sisko steps in on them. It's like, dudes.
That's why the murder mystery is so difficult. It's like, well, apparently you can just come on in whenever you want to. And it was, my favorite thing about the holodeck was when the guy got stabbed, right, and the program turned off, did his corpse just fall onto the floor with the knife in it? Because he was on a table. And I,
imagine,
I just thought that was very funny.
Corpse follows in the holosuite, and there's no one around to hear it.
No. If no one is, no one happen. Unless the murder is a changeling, I suppose.
It sounds like we're agreed that the Odo clone like murder mystery isn't particularly strong. But in terms of, if we're just focusing on more on Odo, how do we feel this episode does on kind of fleshing him out or exploring him as a character?
He's got a good moment with Sisko's office. You kind of get where he's coming from. And where Sisko's coming from, again, you reaffirm Sisko's dominance.
The justice is justice scene, yeah.
His line about laws are laws, but justice is a great early Odo line. Odo's one of my favorite characters of the franchise, I think. He's a good example of sort of that, the show both locking into what the metaphor is with him, as well as his construction in the very first place. His makeup is bad at this point, but we can just say that and move aside. I like Odo quite a bit. The justice is justice line is fantastic. I think that he is acted correctly from the get-go. He's always been portrayed very well by Aubrey Janois. I think that the problem with him in the episode is that he does get sidetracked a little bit, and ultimately, I'm not really sure if the metaphor of Odo being the other is the, this is not like the time and the place for the storyline, really. Like, he's just in like a sort of technical way, why would the Bajorans turn on Odo? Odo's been with them for years at this point, right? Like, he's been a reliable security chief that they consider to be like a fair go-between between the Cardassians and themselves. And so this idea that they're like that shape-shifting son of a, like, he's the reason all, it's like, well, I thought you guys liked him. Like, why wouldn't, I would have thought that in a story focused on this, you choose a Starfleet character who becomes the one that gets pinned on the murder or something. And it's kind of a Cardassian plot to like disrupt station life at that point or something. So I really like Odo, but I think that if they're trying to show Odo is an other at this point, this was the wrong storyline to choose to show him as the other and not be someone who is immediately trustworthy from everybody. It's just, it's wrong that Sisko trusts him more. He even says, Odo's like, why do you trust me? I don't know who you are. And it's like, yeah, that's true. So shouldn't he fall into the arms of the Bajorans at this point? Shouldn't that be his tighter relationship? And that's not what the episode says.
Mm. Yeah, it does feel a bit artificial in its construction, because in the pilot and in any episode after this, Odo is never really, like, he is portrayed as like different and other, but he's never really portrayed as like a pariah, you know, that people are,
especially
like,
to the Bajorans. Odo.
No, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I believe
it was a Bajoran uniform. Like, he's right. Part of their thing. Yeah.
I believe in the original conception of this episode, the idea was, is that it was going to be more of like a cold case thing. And rather than some present crime, the idea was that some evidence comes out that Odo may have been responsible for this Bajoran murder on the station in the past, or some Bajorans dying. And that's what sets people off. I'm like, that does sound, which they kind of do some seasons later.
It's all good setting up Odo as a suspect, I think, right up until the mob. I think that's where the misstep happens. It's like you take him off the case, but then maybe take the episode in a direction of he's still working it, but unofficially.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the angry mob with pitchforks coming to.
I completely, Sisko having to pull him because he's too compromised to do this investigation makes a lot of sense. And I feel that that's a good conflict between the Federation characters and the Odo character. But it's like, once it gets to the mob, and in contrast to the production that we were talking about before, and the directorial choices of like how you portray characters in a scene, the mob thing is just shot so badly too that it's like, all right, this is cheap TV. This is not good at all. Just like characters handing rocks to each other. It's like, where the hell did you get that rock from? Yeah,
space debris.
It's too bad, because I like the Odo scenes, and I like the Odo and Quark scene. I generally don't like Quark, but I like Odo and Quark talking to each other. And it's too bad. I would agree with Aaron. I just would have, if you can make it so that Odo is not turned hostile by the Bajorans in this episode, or at least if you're going to do that, you have to do something that sets this up better. Like, there has to be some kind of thing that they're just seizing on that they want to get rid of him. But if you're going to come in and say that this character has been the only thing that stopped complete Cardassian brutality on the Bajorans at that point, is that Odo has a sense of justice that he won't allow this to happen. You have to come up with a better reason than this guy died. And there, the evidence is just, he told me he didn't like you, and then he's dead. So obviously you killed him, right? This is how stuff works.
Odo at 8.
He yeah. says in his diary, he's meeting you at 8 o'clock. Odo. So clearly you murdered him. Oh, I wish I had that guy's agenda. That was like he's like, go to the space dock, go gamble.
He's got tennis. He's got tennis listed. A Bajoran's got tennis listed multiple times, multiple days, different hollow streets.
I couldn't have killed him. Look at the shape this guy was in. He was getting so much cardio. I wouldn't have been able to murder him. And it's not fun. And the whole Star Trek thing of, he's actually this old man wearing a Mission Impossible mask is stupid too. And so, you know,
it's straight out of like 60s Mission Impossible. Aha!
I straight up already blocked that out. That's so funny. I was like, oh yeah, the old guy plot. Like, yeah. Who's this wise old Bajoran in the back of the mob?
Yep. he's at the bar too. He just, the camera pans and he's just at the bar staring at him. It's like, oh, this guy's got something to do. Also, I mean, not to nitpick, I'm not one for nitpicking, but I would imagine you could have told that this thing was a clone before it got to human, full human shape, right? Like, you must be looking at this. I think the show tries to dance around why you can't just genetically test it, but it's none of this makes any sense, Bashir. Just get in there, get a blood sample, and tell me who this is.
Well, like, yeah, they're, it's building DNA, and like, once the DNA is completed, you know what it is.
Yeah, you don't have to grow it.
But we're not sure yet.
It could be a crocodile. It could be a human. At this point, we don't know.
He put it down the garbage chute. I have no idea. It looks vaguely human, but who knows?
Yeah, just some random sample.
If that mob could keep it down out there, I might be able to get this done faster. But until then.
Rabble.
Yeah, and it's such a just deflating climax because it's literally just Bashir waiting for the test results, and that's what solves the crime. And it's just – and it's not – Cisco – Odo doesn't solve – it feels like this – the missed opportunity here is that this should have been a Cisco-Odo episode showing them in conflict with each other. It's like, this is Starfleet, and it's like, well, but justice is justice, and them trying to have to figure that out because then it would make it – if there was a case – if you could have an ending of Odo solving the case, but then Cisco also giving like his first version of a Cisco speech, but none of that actually goes anywhere. Bashir just shows up and says, oh, it's not Ubedan. And then everyone just, yeah. Oh, and just kind of slowly saunters off and no one cares anymore.
Odo goes, I know where he really is. No one come with me. I'm going to go by myself. And then just goes into his apartment or whatever and takes him out.
Well, even in this, it's like, you know, despite its, you know, flaws or shortcomings, there's still some smart stuff going on, you know, in this, even just like the storyline with like Keiko and the school and Jake and Nog.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be really easy for, like, if Voyager had kid characters on there, thank God it actually does. You haven't gone there yet.
we have the baby. We have Naomi Wildman.
Well, Wesley Crusher and, you know, Next Gen, he didn't really resonate, and it just felt like this really saccharine, oh, kids can do it too. And somehow Jake and Nog, it would be really easy for that dynamic to become that. I mean, they're pulling pranks on people, but there's a real, like, heart and, like, weight to like this still feels like kids getting into trouble, and it's, you know, Keiko's like, I need to find meaning, these kids need to find meaning, I mean, there's a lot of conflict here, maybe we can like figure out like a school situation. And it's smart in the sense of like the story itself isn't great, but it's playing against a story of like, you know, people rallying against or coming against like one person, and like it's tearing a community apart. But on this B story, there's someone who's like putting a community together, and like even like the Ferengi boy comes to us to the school. So there, even when the story itself is flawed, there's still some smart compare and contrast, like things playing off each other thematically in the episode B plot, you know?
Yeah.
All right. I think we'll kind of start to wind it down. Any final thoughts on A Man Alone, Wes?
Makes me think of Godsmack. And I kept walking around going, ah, Man Alone. It's a good title, I think. It's a nice hint of what the episode in the show will do. Just the multiple characters fit the scenario of being a man alone in this. And I think that's kind of nice. And it shows the maturity of what they're trying to do with the writing. Not a great DS9 episode. On our scale of 1 to 5, I would still give this one another 2. It's not a revision for me. I wish they did all character work the whole way through of this one and just ignore the sci-fi plot. But I like the character work. Some of the characters are, it's been interesting going back. Like, I like Quark and stuff a little bit more. I think Dax is not as comfortable as she becomes. I don't think she ever really becomes super comfortable, but she's more uptight or not. She's stiffer in this early episode than she eventually becomes.
Yeah. Odo's still finding his voice, I feel like.
Yeah, the gruffness. He's got to pull things together. Cisco is good. We have a nice Avery Brooks here moment where he thinks something is funny in character that I don't think is funny, but he laughs at it as a character. He's, when he's talking to Bashir, I think, he or Dax, he laughs very awkwardly.
Steamed Asna.
Yeah.
Fricasseed. Rolloped, but not steamed. Asna.
Baby, you got a stew going. Yeah, he's that, and that's all good. I think it's just, it's a show finding itself, and the thing that I hate is the murder plot. The thing that I really like is the establishment of the universe, and I like this early. I think the DS9 might even abandon it a little bit too much, but I really like the early station life of like, this is a bad place, and we are kind of just temporary NATO members who have to come in here and hold the peace for a little bit until Bajor gets its feet on the ground. I think they lose that a little bit, but I really like that early on. I think that that's kind of a neat distinction. And to me, it's the thing that's surprising about DS9 is it's ballsy. It's like, if you coming off of TNG, I would have expected much more of a Voyager setup of like, just play it safe. We know what these people want to watch and what they pay for. Give them that. And that's what Voyager is. And DS9, you know, the emissary pilot, you have your new lead come in and tell the fan favorite of the old show to like, get the hell off my station or
go
something.
Fuck yourself.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, it's like, oh, this is ballsy. Like, this is not what the franchise would eventually do. And I respect it for that. And I think Man Alone shows that a little bit. Maybe not as overtly as the emissary scene, but it has a uncomfortable discomfort with its characters that I think is nice.
Aaron, final thoughts on A Man Alone.
I want whatever dessert Nog is having. What's it called? They
Jum jaw stick.
It's sliced whale on a stick or whatever it is. It's yeah, it's disgusting. And just his little Technicolor flea. His Technicolor flea trick or whatever those things were. But
those are dope.
I think I would generally stick to my just feeling of, I think this is a good second episode on like a setup level. It's just not a terribly great episode of, you know, Star Trek, and it definitely feels like they're still trying to figure out what kind of plots we can do. I give them props for trying, like going with a murder plot second out of the gate. That's also fairly shocking. Yeah. Whereas, you know, TNG was, you know, doing a Naked Now, like Naked Time riff for their second episode. It's like, so if we're comparing the two, this is a wild success by comparison. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Wes. It was good to have you on. I was like, I need someone to come talk about A Man Alone. I know it's not the most exciting episode. I need someone who can come at it critically. I'm like,
I can do it.
I think Wes might be able to pull it off.
It's been invigorating. I sit at a point in our podcast where I'm like, oh, Voyager, I got to watch this thing. It was refreshing to watch DS9. It was nice. It was like, well, maybe I'll have to do a revisit or something for it. But it was enjoyable. So thank you very much for having me on, guys.
Yeah, man. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope you enjoyed our coverage of A Man Alone, if not the episode itself. Next week, we are going to be jumping into another twofer. For this next one, we are going to be doing a Q-fer. We've already watched a bunch of Q episodes on this podcast, but never two back-to-back like this. We've also never seen Q on a Star Trek series other than TNG. But next week, we're going to be seeing him make his one and only appearance on DS9. Which, of course, means that we are going to be watching Q-less. And our very good friend Mindy Barnes is going to be returning to the show to watch that one with us. Give us a nice, fresh perspective on everyone's favorite trickster god. That should be a lot of fun. All right, thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you once again to our guest, Wes. And we will see you all next time. Hopefully not being murdered by your own clone. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to share us your own Star Trek story, you can email us at storiedstartrek@gmail.com, or you can visit our Discord server. You can find us by clicking on the link in the show description.